Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time for You Better You Bet with Nick Costos and Ken Barkley. They bring you the betting insight, laughs, and some rants along the way.
You know what Joe Judge likes? Kicking. Go for it. Never. Too risky. Why coach to win when you can coach not to lose?
We'll give you an edge to beat the spread and so much more.
Two teams that are facing each other in week two. If in week one they both went under, what happens in the game when they play each other? Over is literally 60% the last 10 years. It's like the simplest thing imaginable.
What do we call that? Wagertainment. It's You Better You Bet from BetQL.
It is a magnificent Monday here on You Better You Bet BetQL. Ross Tucker coming up in hour number two, Odyssey Sports NFL Insider. The Whale Capper, Drew Dinsett, coming up hour number two, NBC Sports Edge Deep Dive Podcast. Looking back to week two, looking ahead to week three, we've got you covered here on the show. We've also got you covered Packers and Lions coming up tonight, Monday Night Football, the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. It's probably not going to be frozen since it's still like mid-September, but the tundra of Lambeau Field, nonetheless. We will give you all our bets for the Packers and the Lions, side total, and we will wade into the pool of props to try and find winners for you and yours on this magnificent Monday. But right now, we begin, Rick Camp, the rapid-fire recap, the Sunday that was week two in the National Football League. To reiterate, I hear this music, I feel like it's Final Fantasy VI. We're like entering like a new town where like the Empire has a stranglehold on it, and we need to overthrow Kefka and Gastal. It's got real nerdy there. Anyone that's ever played Final Fantasy VI, Ken, is going to really love that reference. Everyone else is like, what the hell is this idiot talking
right
about?
Who are these guys? Right, exactly. What was the when you would get into a battle, was like preemptive strike, right? When you would like join and you would be like able to fight first. What was the name for that?
Yes, the preemptive, not preemptive strike, but preemptive something, I think, when your opposition would literally have their back to you and you would be
that's
able
what,
to get the first
strike. When I heard that music, that's what I think of, where it's like you go into the battle, you know, first thing that comes up, be like, oh no, like back attack, and you can't run away, can't do all that stuff. Oh man.
The music, the muse, the battle music is da na 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 Not even like my top like three or four favorite Final Fantasy games, but a good game nonetheless. All right, let's talk football here. Last night, Sunday night, in a really epic game, Ravens beat the Chiefs 36-35. What a comeback by Lamar Jackson and company. Looked like Baltimore was dead in the water. Instead, they went outright. The game obviously goes way over the total, like we told you it would yesterday on You Better You Bets. Countdown to kickoff here on BetQL. And the final score, Rick, as many were in the game, orchestrated by Baltimore's former MVP quarterback.
Jackson falls back into the shotgun. He takes the snap, holds it out for Williams. Jackson keeps it, runs right, and somersaults into the end zone. Touchdown, Ravens, and Baltimore has taken the lead. 3 minutes and 14 seconds to go, and the Ravens have their first lead tonight.
WBAL on the call. The Ravens take the lead, a lead they would not relinquish. For some reason, Andy Reid calling running plays for the corpse of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's absolutely brutal. He stripped, fumbles, Baltimore recovers, they go forward on fourth and one in their own territory, brilliantly, I might add, get the first down, don't give the ball back to Mahomes, win the game, a stunning win, Ken, for the Baltimore Ravens, and a stunning loss, honestly, for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right, I think the issue I have with this game, I mean, unbelievable game, really enjoyable to watch, obviously a game that lacked defensive stops probably more than anything, but excellent offensive plays, memorable, like shareable highlight plays, the Kelce touchdown run, Lamar Jackson's jump pass obviously will kind of now live forever as just, it's just this insane individual play in a game that they won too. So now it really takes on this legendary life. And, you know, when you and I did the show on Sunday, what stands out is our analysis ended up being pretty correct, which is basically Kansas City's scoring and offense would drive the game. in a certain way. We both kind of liked the over, couldn't really understand why the total was coming down because we thought Kansas City was going to score. And that, like, absolutely, obviously proved to be true. Like, Kansas City, I think, only punted three times in the game, which is a lot for them, but was extremely effective in the red zone, extremely effective with explosive plays. So the scoring was not an issue. Our handicap on Sunday was, like, what is Baltimore going to do? And, you know, with how they looked against Vegas, running back injuries, Lamar as a downfield passer, always still questionable. Could they, like, figure out things that were going to be really, really effective? And I just thought it was kind of, it ended up being really remarkable, just the outstanding game that, like, Lamar had running the ball, which was just, like, absolutely insane. But just that the Ravens were able to really go score for score, like, obviously not something that anyone anticipated. So it's tough to be, all right, individual game awesome. They play 10 weeks from now. They play 14 weeks from now. Like we like the Ravens now. Like, we're in on this. That's where I struggle in terms of, is this just one awesome game and the Ravens were great? Or is this, like, can we learn more than that basically from this?
Lamar Jackson, 107 rushing yards. Baltimore as a team, 251 rushing yards. Dominated time of possession. Look, Kansas City is going to be fine. They're going to score 30-plus points a game, which, by the way, they are. They're going to be just fine here, so not going to overreact to this loss by the Chiefs. That being said, maybe we should overreact a little bit. This defense, Ken, seems very problematic to me. Now, they did face two very good rushing offenses to start the season with Cleveland and Baltimore. But, I mean, they kind of get abused on the ground and even a little bit through the air here, man. Like, this defense is really not good, at least this point in the season for Kansas City. And, by the way, coming into town next week, Justin Herbert and the Chargers.
Yeah, really interesting. It's the exact numbers on that. So the Ravens run 41 times for 251 yards. And I mean, 41 for 251 in an NFL game. It's like college football numbers, something you would see in like an Oklahoma game or something, or an Oregon game. I think they had four explosive plays just in the running game. So not just being able to run the ball effectively, convert on third down, keep drives going, but being able to generate a lot of your explosive plays from the run, something almost no teams can do in the NFL nowadays. Like, I think like Cleveland can do it. I think New England this year can probably do it. There aren't that many where you would like feel good about being able to generate those types of plays. Usually you need downfield passing in order to do it. So yeah, the fact that they were able to do it. Now, let me ask you something. You mentioned, okay, it's Cleveland, Baltimore. Those were the first two opponents for the Chiefs. I mean, those are like the two best teams at doing that basically. So is it right to be critical of Kansas City from a long-term standpoint? Like, this is an issue that needs fixing. You know, we don't trust them as much anymore. Or is it like, yeah, this is going to happen sometimes with their defense in regular season games against teams, and we kind of just have to live with it, and they're going to kind of stomp teams that aren't doing this?
I think it's probably more of the latter. They're going to stomp teams doing it, but it may end up like causing them really when it matters the most. And I'll say this again, Clyde Edwards-Helaire stinks. Like, and I'm not saying like Darrell Williams is great or like Jerick McKinnon's great, although McKinnon does look like he's got some burst until he like inevitably gets hurt. And I hate to say that, but that's been his MO since he came into the National Football League here. Edwards-Helaire is terrible. That is such a brutal draft pick by Kansas City in the first round 2 years ago to pick Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, enough with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, let Patrick Mahomes go win the game. I thought that was a rare misstep by Andy Reid to not just let Patrick Mahomes go win the game. And again, credit to John Harbaugh, credit to Lamar Jackson. How many coaches there kick the ball back to the Chiefs and like quote unquote play defense, right, to try and win the game? The Ravens knew smartly, if we give the ball back to Mahomes right now, at the very least, they're getting a game-winning field goal attempt. Whether it goes in or not, who the hell knows? But the Ravens were like, no, we're keeping this in our hands, the hands of our former MVP quarterback. Lamar gets the first down. The Ravens get a well-deserved 36-35 victory. A couple player-specific notes here, fantasy-wise. It's happened. The awakening. No longer Anaheim. No longer Sacramento. No longer Bakersfield Brown. He's earned it. Marquise Hollywood Brown, fantastic for the second straight game. 6 catches, 113 yards, and a touchdown. Mark Andrews bouncing back, 5 catches for 57 yards. So I thought that was pretty good if you're a fantasy owner of Mark Andrews. How about Baltimore taking Tyreek Hill out of the game? Only 3 catches for 14 yards. First time they've ever really been able to do that, take Tyreek out of the game. And maybe it goes to show, like, when Baltimore plays like these stud number one wide receivers. Now, Kelsey got them. Mecole Hardman got them, 5 for 55. Robinson scored a touchdown. Pringle scored a touchdown. But I think that's an interesting thing to take away. Baltimore able to successfully remove Tyreek Hill from the game. Of course, they did still allow 35 points. Darrell Williams got a short yardage touchdown, something to watch for now after the Edwards-Helaire fumble, like what the usage is going to be moving forward in week three for the Chiefs, et cetera, here with Williams versus Clyde Edwards-Helaire in that backfield. And while Latavius Murray got run, did score a touchdown short yardage in this game, Tyson Williams did out-snap and out-carry Latavius Murray. The Chiefs 6.5-point favorite Sunday against Justin Herbert and the Chargers. 55.5 the total in that game. The Ravens travel to Detroit in week number three. The Lions, of course, play Monday Night Football tonight against the Green Bay Packers. You better, you bet, BetQL, Nick Costos, Ken Barkley, Magnificent Monday, recapping what we saw the Sunday that was in the National Football League week number two. Ken, let's stay in the AFC West and go to the Chargers, who lose to the Cowboys. Great call by you. Dallas plus the points. Dallas wins the game. They win 20-17. And somehow, someway, in a game with 830 yards of total offense, Ken, 37 points are scored combined between the two teams. If only someone had said this, or two people had said this, yesterday and on Friday. Oh, it was us. Don't bet the over in this game with the Cowboys and the Chargers. Mike McCarthy tried his best to screw it up at the very end, but Greg the Leg Zuerlein, a 56-yarder, as time expires, Ken. Dallas improves to 1-1. The Chargers drop to 1-1.
Yeah, and it just, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head from a yardage standpoint in terms of, yeah, like there were likely going to be a lot of yards in this game, and some of the stats that bear that out. The third down percentage for both teams was excellent. Both teams over 40%, Cowboys like 60% on third down. Weren't that many third downs, explosive plays. The yards per play is staggering, way above league average in terms of both of them. So you had like the type of offense that could generate a game that went into the 50s. But I want to bring this up. Maybe this isn't the most obvious note. We could do McCarthy being an idiot with Zuerlein at the end and settling for a long field goal. We could do the Justin Herbert in the grasp call on that really key play down by the goal, which is like incredible. And like when Romo and Nance are both just like, I mean, it was very funny. The commentary was like, they weren't even trying to be like, no, this was actually just terrible.
Did you hear what he said, by the way, after the game? He said he was looking at the clock in the stadium that had stopped working, Mike McCarthy.
I think
I think Mike McCarthy's brain stopped working. Probably,
I think he's
like
a clock that stopped working. Right. Yeah. That's right. Exactly. Where I kind of want to start here is something with the Chargers that's now come up in consecutive games and which may ultimately prevent them from having the type of season that I think.
I'm happy you're bringing this up because I have a strong take on this, but go on. I know exactly where you're going.
The Chargers for the second consecutive game are disasters in the red zone. I mean, absolute disasters. What did everyone say off the Washington game? Well, everyone except me. What did everyone but me say after the Washington game? This was the most unlucky box score. They should have won by 95 points. If they just score in the red zone, it's like everything's going to go great. Or this is actually like a huge issue for them. So 1-for-4 in the red zone in this game. I want to say it was 1-for-4 against Washington actually as well. But the point is just in the red zone in both situations, a lot of struggles. And that tends to be something that sticks with teams throughout a season. Teams like the Chargers last season were actually another one of these teams. Atlanta last year was absolutely one of these teams. It became something week to week that was actually kind of dependable. Like as you were handicapping games, like, oh, well, they're going to get in the red zone like 4 or 5 times, but get ready for a young Waku to come out and kick a bunch of 38-yard field goals. I feel like with the Chargers, is this going to be a thing this year? It's still Herbert. It's interesting if that's the reason as opposed to a coaching change. But I mean, if you're looking for a reason they lost the game, plenty of opportunities to score. Sure, the officials prevented them maybe from scoring on one opportunity. 1-for-4, obviously, you're not going to win a lot of games in that situation.
Yeah, and then and Jose Vizcaino's brother, Tristan Vizcaino, right. I think is his name for the Chargers, is the new young Waku in this situation. I actually think, Ken, and I could be wrong about this.
Okay.
Obviously, as I could be about anything or anything anyone says right in life. I think they're going to get it figured out. I think this coaching staff is really smart. I think that they've got like the types of weapons offensively. But I guess you could say this about Atlanta last year with like Julio Jones, right? Like, sure. How does this make sense?
You just named the names, right? Yeah.
But they've got Big Mike, Keenan Allen. I like the young receivers, Jalen Guyton. I like Josh Palmer. I think they need to figure out who their backup running back is going to be, like behind Eckler. Justin Jackson got the run yesterday. Larry Roundtree had it in week number one here. But I kind of feel like the Chargers are going to figure this out. Now, I don't know if it's going to be something where I'm going to be right coming up in week number three, because if they struggle week three in the red zone, they're going to get that ass blown
out.
Not
a game you can struggle in.
Not a game you can struggle in. So do you think this is something that's going to be predictive? Because I look at the personnel and the coaching staff, and I'm thinking the personnel's too good, and I think I've got enough. I think. I don't know for sure, but I think Brandon Staley and his staff are going to get this figured out, and I feel like this is not going to last for too much longer.
You and I both like Staley a lot and think that he's a great coach. So I think that leads to that confidence. In terms of whether to think something like this is predictive, I always like to give it a month on stuff like this before really feeling good about team profile stuff. Took us at least a month last year to learn Chargers close game stuff. Giants is like the sticky underdog, how to play, you know, like Denver and a couple other teams we played last year in very specific ways. Like, let's get at least like a quarter of the season before we really kind of like have those concrete judgments. But I mean, through two games and through two games against two defenses, Washington, who may have a bad defense, like we're actually not even sure, it might just be bad. And against Dallas, so this isn't like a Bill Belichick bend but don't break strategy. These are two potentially bottom of the third defenses, bottom third of the league defenses, struggling in the red zone against both could potentially be a bad sign. We don't know yet, but that was immediately the first thing statistically that stood out to me in the game.
Officiated game of the young season, and I feel like come season's end, I think we'll have a hard time trying to find one that could dethrone this as the worst officiated game of the year. Absolutely terrible.
Whew, not a great coached game. I mean, the McCarthy thing with Zuerlein, it's just like, if you ever wonder how Dallas, like when they're 8-9 at the end of the year and you're like, how did this happen? Decisions like that create seasons like that, like 10 win teams, 11 win teams. How do you end up going under 500 in close games? Because you do stuff like that. And I know they end up winning, but it's just amazing.
All right, let's get some player specific notes here to wrap up this segment. More recap coming up next segment, of course, on You Better You Bet. I've been saying it, and now like everyone's hopping on it. How many times did I say last year Tony Pollard is better than Ezekiel Elliott?
Many times.
And now everyone's like, oh, now Pollard's better than Zeke. Duh. Pollard's been better than Zeke. And it's not that Zeke is bad. It's just that Tony Pollard's really good. Pollard, 13 for 109, 3 for 31 in the passing game. Zeke, 16 for 71 in the run game, 2 for 26 in the passing game. CeeDee Lamb showed you he's the alpha of this Dallas Cowboys passing offense. 8 catches for 81 yards. Quiet days for Amari Cooper and Cedric Wilson in for the injured Michael Gallup. Big Mike Williams, 7 for 91 on 10 targets. 4.5 was his receptions prop. Books are going to have to boost this up because this is a different usage of Mike Williams than we've seen throughout his career. Keenan Allen, 4 for 108 on 8 targets. He's going to be a stud every week. And you got to love this if you're an Austin Eckler owner. After no targets in week one, 9 catches on 9 targets yesterday for the healthy Austin Eckler. Cowboys, a 4-point favorite against the Eagles on Monday night. Chargers, 6.5-point dogs at Kansas City. More recap coming up right after this.
From pro basketball to Nikki football, soccer bets, and so much more, we've got you covered. It's You Better You Bet with Nick Costos and Ken Barkley from BetQL. It's Nick Costos and Ken Barkley on You Better You Bet from QL.
Magnificent, marvelous Monday continues here on You Better You Bet. Ross Tucker, Odyssey Sports NFL Insider, 20 minutes from now. Then it's the Whale Capper, Drew Dinsick, NBC Sports Edge, and the Deep Dive Podcast. Power Hour, Final Hour, all our bets for tonight. The end of Week 2, Monday Night Football with the Packers and the Lions. Side, total, and propaganda preach will enter the pool of props to try and figure out some winners for us and for you, dear listener and dear viewer. But for now, we continue our recap of the Sunday that was in the National Football League. I don't know how Seattle can manage to lose this game. I actually it's actually incredible to me that this happened. And like, we had the Titans. So great. Tennessee wins 33-30, Rick, on this game winner.
Bullock has been good. This is a 36 yarder to win it. Snap, set, kick. Got it!
Yes.
How about these Titans?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
The impossible situation. Possible. Everybody said it couldn't happen, and it happened. How about that?
Everybody said it couldn't happen, except for us, who both bet the Titans, and Ken gave out Titans on the money line in a parlay. I mean, what the hell is that? I appreciate the homer nature of some of these local broadcast teams. WGFX on the call. Good on Tennessee for winning this game, and Tennessee's got to look at the rest of that division now. A huge win for that at 1-1 and be like, wow, we might as well be the Buccaneers in this division, the AFC South, which is brutal. For me, this is much more about how does Seattle lose this game up 30-16 at home against Tennessee. Titans come back and win 33-30 in overtime. Titans obviously cash outright as a 6.5-point dog. Game goes way over the total. And what really turned Duquesne a dumb off at the end of the game between two dumb coaching staffs, and Seattle proved to be even dumber than Mike Vrabel in Tennessee.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because I think Vrabel's a good coach, but I totally agree with you in terms of like on in the game, on the field, those types of decisions. It's tough sometimes, man. And this game, you're correct. So just the particulars, just to really hammer it in for people. Yes, like the Seahawks led 30-16 in this game with like 11 minutes to go, basically. They win yards per play by more than a yard. They win turnovers. They have a 14-point fourth quarter lead, and they lose.
At home.
At home.
In front of the first time in 2 years.
To a team that still plays no discernible defense you could ever imagine. They managed to go 3 and out on consecutive possessions after going up 30-16. They allow the touchdown run to Derrick Henry, and then the offense does absolutely zero from that. I mean, really, like an amazing. You know what's so funny is because like Derrick Henry should get a lot of the accolades, which is great. The coaching stuff that you mentioned is definitely part of the equation. Those two Seattle series of downs, like it's Tennessee. Like Arizona had no problems with this the entire game. And in spots where, again, maybe it's like situational, just like tight situations where you're up and, you know, you want to like you have certain plays that you like to run. Whoever gets the blame for it, Carroll, Waldron, Russell Wilson executing with the offense, to have 2 3-and-outs against like a historically terrible defense when you have to put the game away is pretty rough, man. So, yeah, I mean, like Derrick Henry's awesome. In the fourth quarter, he did exactly what the Tennessee Titans would love him to do in terms of how they want their offense to run. But it's just Seattle's inability to even get one first down in those situations when they have a big fourth quarter lead. I mean, improbable is honestly the word that comes to mind, given the defense, Nick, that they're going up against.
Yeah, and listen, there was some brutal hitting in this game. The Jones play was a touchdown. Almost. Like, yeah. I'm sorry. Like, I don't even understand how like that gets ruled a touchdown on the field, and then it gets overturned. These are the kind of things that make me sit there when I'm watching the games on my couch on Sunday thinking the FBI should open an investigation into what just happened in this game.
Well, Thursday night.
How do you make that call?
That spot. It's the same thing. That spot Thursday night where they're like, stands. Like, what are you talking? Like, you can't overturn it based on a guy with no one around him falling forward 5 yards. We can't do that.
And you've got Gene Steratore on CBS sounding like Baghdad Bob, like with the propaganda here, being like, yeah, I think it's a great call by the crew. Like, really? That's a good call? Like, we all watched him get his foot down. Like, and he's like, oh, yeah, I could see. This is a great call. I'm so tired of the former officials on these broadcasts just basically caping up for all the bad decisions that get made. Terry McCauley, actually, and I forget which game it was on, actually was like, yeah, I don't agree with this call. Maybe it was Sunday night, the Sunday night game. I'm not 100% sure.
Night, right?
Yeah. Sunday. So, like, that was actually okay. But, I mean, Gene Steratore, really? Like, it's like the line from 1984, like the George Orwell line. Like, you will know, like, don't believe, like, what your eyes tell you and your ears tell you. That's, like, the final thing that that big right. brother
the
wants.
Final command. It's like
the final command.
Your eyes and
the
ears
final
like
and
that.
The most yeah. essential command is abandon the evidence of your eyes and ears. That's what the NFL wants us to do with some of these calls. I'm not trying to make it like they're sinister. They're just dumb to, like, an unbelievable level with some of these things that happen. And I mentioned, Ken, like, this is a win that I think Tennessee will look back on at the end of the season when they inevitably win the AFC South because the division's absolute garbage, and they say, this basically may have gotten us into the postseason here. When it comes down to it for Seattle, with the way the rest of that division's yeah. looking, this may be for Seattle where they go, man, like, we missed the playoffs because of this loss. And I know it's only week two, and like that may very well not be the case. It feels like a big deal. It feels important that Seattle lost this game.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, it could be week two. What typically determines for the non-elite teams, so not Tampa, not Kansas City, like whether you make the playoffs or not is just performance in close games. You know, games decided by 7 points or less, which is 90% of the games we see every Sunday. It's one of the reasons why everybody loves the NFL. Literally every game is almost, it's like computer assistance in, you know, a video game. Like, it's just going to get closer at the end. We just already know that's going to
happen. Here's the blue shell. Your team's ahead by 14 right. in the fourth quarter. The Titans right. blue shell in Mario Kart.
Right, and you get the banana peel or the green shell, and you have to figure out what to do with it. Sit on it, basically. And so I agree with you. Like, it doesn't really matter what week it happens. You lose a close game where you had a high win percentage. Even if you didn't play in a good division, honestly, I mean, just like these types of performances can typically at the end of the year, tough division, not tough division, even opponent as good as this, and Tennessee might end up being a pretty good team, opponent that's terrible, just when you lose close games, your likelihood of making the playoffs just, you know, plummets as a result of it. So, yeah, I mean, brutal loss. And then for Tennessee, you mentioned it, Indianapolis, we're not big fans. We'll see what happens with Wentz and the injury. Houston, you know, yeah, now they have a quarterback injury as well, obviously.
They've got to, Ken, hear me out here. Houston, hear me. They've got a problem.
Okay. Nice. Yep. Love that. Love everything about it. That's I'm surprised I didn't see that on Twitter like 100 times yesterday. Usually I do. Usually anything involving Houston, I end up seeing it. Or Justin Houston or anybody with the last name Houston. I actually see it as well. So yeah, I mean, Tennessee to win the division, obviously would expect that price to continue. And then Wilson MVP, I'll be curious to see where that goes to. Just my last note, 343, two touchdowns, no picks. We saw a lot of good quarterback performances again on Sunday, like three that stand out specifically. But yeah, I think we're going to see continue to see his odds drop. Kyler and Tom Brady, obviously, as well.
How about Mike Vrabel, by the way, bailed out, kicking that field goal at the end of the game. They're only on their 47th kicker of the year, and it's only week two. Let's send Randy Bullock
out there. Randy Bullock.
Just
guy who never met a game-winning kick he couldn't miss. With Cincinnati, it was the same
thing. Well, Bullock was the guy last year, right, when he injured his leg and he faked the injury because he missed the kick. I just don't understand some of this. It's crazy. Fantasy notes here. Derrick Henry, 35 for 182 and three touchdowns. More encouraging, though, if you're a Derrick Henry fantasy owner. Six catches for 55 yards. Like the PPR upside is finally being, this might actually be the good thing of this Todd Downing offense. Henry's getting thrown the ball. AJ Brown was brutal in the game. Three catches for 43 yards, a number of drops, including what would have been like an 80 plus yard touchdown. Brutal if you had AJ Brown in fantasy season long or DFS. Julio Jones looks just fine after a week one egg. Six for 128 and one, should have been two touchdowns. Tyler Lockett, one of the best values of draft season, 878 and one. He is absolutely fantastic. Mind meld working with Russell Wilson. On Sunday, the Seahawks going to be 1.5 point road favorites at the Vikings. Talk about them in a second. Total 55.5. And Tennessee, a 5-point favorite over the Colts. Very interesting game there. 50.5 the total. We will touch on that when we take our early look at the week three NFL card. You better, you bet, BetQL. Nick Costos, Ken Barkley. Marvelous Monday. Magnificent Monday. Recapping the Sunday that was week two in the National Football League. Rick, the Cardinals beat the Vikings 34-33. Let's just hear what Paul Allen had to say at the very end.
From 37 yards away to win it for the Vikings. Snap, spot. The kick is up, and the kick is no good. He missed it wide to the right. He missed it, and the Cardinals win it 34-33.
Oh, he pushed it, David. Oh, my goodness. Magic has happened in front of the Red Sea once again.
That's Dave Passion, Ron Wolfery with the call. My bed there on the false start from yours truly.
Magic has happened.
At some point here, let's get Rick the Paul Allen call, because it is unbelievable, because he goes nuts when the Vikings lose these close games. So Cardinals win 34-33. Vikings cash for us. We had them plus the points. Game goes over the total, of course. At just one of these losses where it's like, how did Minnesota manage to lose this game, Ken?
Yeah, and my question coming out of it, so I mean, you know, Zimmer after the game, obviously we're like two plays from being 2-0. I mean, welcome to the NFL. Every game is decided by 7 points or less, so you're definitely not alone. The offensive performance in the game, like you see the score, it was a completely authentic 34-33 game. Both teams, I think, were over 7 yards per play, way, way, way above the league average. My one question coming out of the game, and I'll be curious if 3 weeks from now, 5 weeks from now, 7 weeks from now, we're having the same conversation. Is Arizona's offense going to be one of like those units this year? So we talked about this last year, like Bills offense, Chiefs offense, Rams defense, even Patriots special teams at times last year, just like the truly elite units in the NFL, where if you have one of them, your likelihood of making a deep playoff run, et cetera, goes a lot higher. We're not there yet with the Cardinals offense. They've only played two games. One was against Tennessee. This one's against Minnesota. We're not sure how either defense is going to end up ranking at season's end. You know, is Arizona's offense, with obviously Kyler at the helm of all of it, are they going to be one of those units this year? I think it's at least possible.
Yeah, Arizona's offense is absolutely tremendous. Kyler Murray, the trigger man of all of it, now that he's fully healthy. I mean, the production that he puts up is ridiculous. He makes so many wow plays every single week. You're just sitting there like, how the hell did he just do that? Some of the throws that he makes, obviously as mobile as he is, he's so good. I'm so pissed that he's not a New York Giant, because I'm watching him in Oklahoma. Like, I was looking back, I don't know why I do this to myself. Like searching like my tweets with the word Kyler in them. And I'm literally in 2018 being like, can my team please get Kyler Murray? You know what we got instead? Danny Dimes. Kyler, 29 of 36, 400 yards, three touchdowns and a rushing touchdown. Nice bounce back for Dalvin Cook. Dalvin can't stay healthy. It's just worrisome. He's able to come back into the game, but gets nicked up a couple times. 22 for 131. Kirk Cousins played really well. He played well enough to win. Three passing touchdowns here. How about the Purple Goblin, KJ Osborne? I'm probably the only one that calls him that. 5 for 95 and a touchdown.
I'm all in on the name.
Yeah, the Purple Goblin. 5.95 and a touchdown. Justin Jefferson's ceiling seems like it's capped right now by the emergence of Osborne. Greater defensive attention paid to him. Only 6 for 65. Hopkins only 54 receiving yards. Rondale Moore was the star. 7 for 114 and a touchdown. He looks absolutely electric with the ball in his hands. As we told you, the Vikings 1.5 point home dogs against Seattle coming up on Sunday. The Cardinals 7.5 point favorites on the road at the miserable Jacksonville Jaguars, total 51.5. Hour one done. Hour two for you coming up on the other side. We will continue the rapid fire recap with the Raiders and the Steelers and more. But our guy, Odyssey Sports NFL insider Ross Tucker, called the Chiefs Ravens last night, gets us started. Hour number two. Next.
It's You Better You Bet from BetQL. For the latest line movement and edges to beat the spread, download the BetQL app today. It's Nick Costos and Ken Barkley on You Better You Bet. QL.
Love the back-to-back guest segments. Ross Tucker, Odyssey Sports NFL insider, and our pal the Whale Capper, Drew Dinsick from the NBC Sports Edge. Ken and I going to give you our early look at the Week 3 card coming up in Hour number 3. Lock Miss Day 1 in Hour number 3 on the Heisman Market. Rick Camp's NBA thoughts in Hour number 3. And then the final hour of the Power Hour, all our bets for tonight. Packers and the Lions. Monday Night Football. But we continue our rapid fire recap in Pittsburgh, where Derek Carr, John Gruden, and the Raiders improved to 2-0 by beating the Steelers 26-17 on the heels of this touchdown from Carr to my guy, Henry Ruggs.
Carr takes a snap from the gun. Pump fake, gonna go deep down the middle. Got it. Ruggs grabs it. Jackpot, baby. Henry Ruggs goes the distance.
Something great about Brent Musburger calling Raiders games. Agreed. You absolutely have to love that. So Henry Ruggs, the awakening perhaps happening for Ruggs like it is for Marquise Hollywood Brown. The Raiders improved to 2-0. TJ Watt exits the game in the second quarter, which screws things up for Pittsburgh's defense. But still, impressive stuff from the Raiders. Impressive stuff from Derek Carr, who I was killing during the game last week. 382 passing yards. Raiders went outright as 6.5 point dogs. Ken, and the game goes under the total.
Yeah, and it's so funny off the Steelers-Bills game where we were asking, like, well, maybe the Bills defense is just really good. Like, maybe they've turned a corner and, like, the Steelers offense won't look exactly like how it looked against Buffalo. And it was, I guess, like, a little bit better because how could it be the same as, I mean, it was so bad against Buffalo. It almost had nowhere to go but up. But, I mean, you look at it from I had one red zone trip, I think, in the entire game. Yards per play was about league average, but a total inability to run the ball yet again. Najee Harris, 10 for 38 in the game. Now, you could say, like, oh, well, they were trailing for part of it. It's still, like, it's like a zero. And we're going to talk about the Atlanta-Tampa game. It's the same dynamic where it's just like, yeah, you know what? They can just never do run the ball. And that's, you don't have balance. That's like obviously a big problem. So it's interesting. It just kind of on a personal note, I actually feel like there was one game where I missed an opportunity to make a bet, and it was probably in this game. And I'm guilty of this just like anybody else. You're so inundated with like messaging, injuries, trends, travel, fatigue, coaching trends, like all this stuff that isn't my number. And it all of it in totality said Pittsburgh. And then my number said Raiders. And most of the time I'm able to be like, you know what? I just bet my number. Like, I don't listen to all of this stuff. I do that with a lot of games. It ends up going pretty well. And this was one where it actually literally psyched me out from betting this game whatsoever. Ended up passing the game. I feel like I probably missed a valuable bet. Maybe that's a little bit of hindsight, but it was a situation where my number showed an edge. So kind of depressing, a little disappointed, honestly, that I missed out on this one where a lot of people thought the Raiders had no chance. We talked about a lot of the informational reasons why that might be true. They outgain the Steelers in the game. They prevent the Steelers from running the ball, and they end up with a pretty surprising victory, I think, to a lot of sports bettors.
You know what else is depressing? Watching the Steelers offensive line, watching Roethlisberger lumber around like Frankenstein out there out on the field. Like, I'm sorry, he's washed. And I get the Steelers defense didn't have TJ Watt, didn't have Joe Hayden, didn't have Devin Bush. So I don't want to put too much stock into, you know, the Raiders here, and good on them for winning the game. Good on them for winning, right? But this was not a full-strength Pittsburgh defense. That being said, the offensive line stinks, and Ben Roethlisberger's washed up. So I think Pittsburgh's in big trouble
and Deontay
as we move
hurt
along the season. Now, on the final play of the game, which was meaningless, stupid by
which
Mike Tomlin
insane.
And company. Yeah. Now, apparently, this is not a serious injury for Deontay. We'll see about his availability for Sunday's game against Cincinnati, but he may not play in this game, and that's a major loss as Pittsburgh's number one receiver. The Raiders averaged 2.1 yards per carry and won the game by 9 points. Like, unbelievable. Ruggs, 5 for 113 at a touchdown. 7 targets, the most in his NFL career, so you'll love to see that for Henry Ruggs. Najee Harris, 10 carries, 38 yards. Like, the Steelers' offensive line is just bad. That's why it was so stupid for the Steelers to draft the running back in the first round. Not that Najee can't be great, but the offensive line's absolutely brutal. Steelers, 4.5-point favorites against the Bengals on Sunday, 44.5. The Raiders, about a 5-point favorite against the Miami Dolphins, total 45.5. We'll get to the Dolphins and the Bills coming up momentarily here. But let's go first to the Niners and the Philadelphia Eagles. San Francisco winning this game 17-11. Ken and I go mano a mano. I somehow lose. Ken somehow wins. Good on Ken, but man, this one really stung. And Rick, I think the reason why I ultimately lost this bet was because Nick Sirianni and the Eagles did this at the end of the first half.
Offense out there on fourth down and goal. It's a reverse. Greg Ward, the former college quarterback, cutting it, throwing it, incomplete, and it's a turnover on downs. Once again, the 49ers hold up. Shades of Philly special, but not the same result.
Yeah, shades of Philly special. Shades of it. Or it was the same exact play. Like, shades right. of Philly yeah. special.
Shades of Ken Barkley over here. Right, yeah.
I mean, you start at, like, your own, like, 1 yard line. Quez Watkins, 91-yard play, and then, like, you don't score any points. Just incredible. So the Niners win, Ken. The Niners cover, much to my chagrin, to your bank account benefit, and the game goes way under the total, aka this game was a complete disaster for me, who love the Eagles in the over.
Yeah, I mean, San Francisco wins, but I mean, I'll be honest, like, I did a lot of radio, and we talked about this game on the show, and like, my general handicap or analysis was just kind of like, I'm really excited for this game. This was the game that I was the most excited to watch. Ended up being a first half littered with punts, as it turned out, was because of, like, the offensive game plan that each coach could potentially put together. And we just didn't see that in this game. Now, you could be like, well, the defense has actually played above expectation. Maybe there's more here contextually that's not, you know, just that the offenses couldn't get anything going, but the offenses couldn't get anything going. And from a yardage standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, I mean, the play that we played, that Philly special, really did kind of end up deciding the game. Like, Philly outgained San Francisco yards per play. They outgained them because they have longer, more sustained drives that don't result in as many points. So efficiency wise, obviously Philly was hurt, but honestly, like, I can celebrate that the Niners covered and, like, I won the bet and that's great. There was nothing about this game that played out how I expected it to play out. And it's interesting how we leave this game with, I think, just interesting questions about what the Eagles are going forward, going into, I know we usually end with the team's next games, but Monday night at Dallas in their next game, which is obviously a critically important game for the division. Like, how do we view Philly going into that game? I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I think they're going to get torched by Dak. The question is whether they can score or not to keep up, which may very well be the case. But I think this defense is in for a rude awakening coming up Monday night against Dallas. I give San Francisco a lot of credit, Ken, for the way they were able. They boa constricted Philly in this game. Yep. Like, they played bully ball on some of these long drives. Like, the run game couldn't really get going, and they all got hurt. It was insane. Elijah Mitchell gets hurt. Hasty gets hurt. Trey Sermon comes in. First NFL carry, concussion and fumble. Can't go much worse than that. So, I mean, we'll see kind of like what the aftermath is going to be in fantasy this week. I thought watching the game, Hasty was their best running back. So we'll see if that kind of continues. We'll see who's going to be healthy here. Nick Bosa has 2 sacks in the game. Philly, just so many missed opportunities. Kyle Shanahan, Ken, saying after the game, the fact that they were up 7-3 at the half, quote, was unbelievable. Just ridiculous that San Francisco managed to win this game and cover the spread. Not that I'm bitter. Jimmy Garoppolo played every snap for the 49ers. I thought he played pretty well in the game. If you're a Miles Sanders fantasy owner, you can't be thrilled with Kenneth Gainwell getting 6 carries in this game. They seem committed to getting the rookie Gainwell a bunch of touches. Debo Samuel, 6 for 93. Brandon Ayuk, a non-factor yet again. George Kittle still has yet to get going this season. So the Niners on Sunday Night Football take on the Green Bay Packers. Packers obviously play tonight on Monday night, and the Eagles, as we said, next Monday night, 4-point road dogs in Dallas, total 50.5. You better you bet. BetQL, Nick Costos, Ken Barkley, magnificent Monday running through week 2 in the National Football League, NFL Sunday. Great performance by the Miami Dolphins. Lose 35-0 to the Buffalo Bills, and it wasn't even Josh Allen in the passing game, Rick, that got the job done for the Bills.
The give goes to Motor Singletary. Big hole up the middle. Finds room. He's at the 30. 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. Devin Singletary motors into the end zone. Touchdown, Buffalo. A 46-yard touchdown run.
John Murphy, Bills Radio Network, there on the call. Buffalo shuts out Miami 35-0. And the big story here, obviously, knocking Tua Tagovailoa out from the game very early on. Dolphins offensive line non-existent. AJ Epenesa blows by right tackle Jesse Davis, destroys poor Tua, who looked like he would rather be anywhere else at that moment than South Beach, which is a pretty fun place to be. And I know I lived there for 3 years.
Yeah, no, bruised ribs for Tua. It sounds like, you know, further testing, evaluation. I don't think we have a confirmed status for him, obviously, for Sunday's game where they're at Vegas. I think it'll be interesting what ends up happening. So it's always tough, right, in these types of games. I think we have a lot of reason to believe that Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll and the Bills offense, we're going to score a lot of points in this game anyway. It's possible. They did it in both games last year. It's possible this is just a very advantageous matchup for them. They were going to score anyway. But anytime you have games that feature a quarterback injury, especially very early on in the game, I always have a really hard time figuring out like how authentic anything that happened in the game from that point forward is. You spend all week preparing a certain game plan of, you know, Tua gets all the first team reps. Obviously, Jacoby Brissett's his backup. Like, what are we supposed to take away from this necessarily? It's just interesting. So I think from a Bills offensive standpoint, was it good to see them score a little bit more? You know, I don't think Josh Allen was like amazing, but was it good to see better than what we saw against Pittsburgh? Sure, against a pretty good Miami defense. There were a million turnovers in this game. Obviously, Brissett played about what you would expect for having to come in off the bench in this kind of a spot. So I know the score line is so jarring, like 35-0. Oh my God. I don't know if it was like an oh my God game necessarily. Like I just, because of the quarterback injury, I don't know if I have like some master takeaway from this that's going to help us make money in each of the teams next week's games.
Something to watch moving forward. Josh Allen, 7-33, under 50% completion percentage, scattershot for the second straight week. Didn't matter. Singletary, 82 yards on the ground. Zach Moss active, 8-26 and 2 rushing touchdowns. Jaylen Waddle pacing the Miami passing attack, 6-48. But Will Fuller did return to Miami to the Dolphins today on Monday. So we'll see how that impacts the team moving forward. Bills, 9.5-point favorites against the football team, 46.5. And Miami, 4.5, 5-point dogs on the road at Vegas, 45.5. Ken, let's close this hour quickly with the Panthers and the Saints. Carolina suffocates New Orleans, wins 26-7. Game goes under the total. This was bad for Jameis Winston and New Orleans.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to try to figure out like how much of what's happening with New Orleans is due to like just, you know, like the actual composition of the team, our expectations for them, a rating for them, and how much of it is due to Sean Payton and the coaches that are out due to COVID protocols and being away from New Orleans for so long. Like, is there a residue on this that's going to end up lingering? They're obviously at New England next week. I think that's very interesting. My second note very quickly is just Carolina's played the Jets and New Orleans, two not particularly explosive offenses, but have completely shut them down in both games. And they get Houston on Thursday Night Football. There's at least a chance the defense is really good. I don't think we're going to learn that this week, but I think, you know, two impressive performances against offenses that, to be honest, a great defense should shut down, and they've done so.
Yeah, a lot of good young players on that. It's keyed by Brian Burns, Derek Brown, obviously. I mean, they're just kind of studs on every level. So this Panthers defense might actually be good. Sam Darnold, 26-38, 305 yards, 2 passing touchdowns. DJ Moore looks like his clear number one receiver. You love to see it. 8-79 and a touchdown for DJ Moore on 11 targets. Christian McCaffrey, another monster game in terms of the workload, 29 total touches. And Jameis Winston, 11 of 22, 111 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 picks, now has 259 yards passing in 2 games. He would have that in a half sometimes with Tampa, along with 2 pick sixes and 2 passing touchdowns. So I think the Saints offense is in big trouble here. Saints, dogs next week against New England, 43.5. And we've got the Panthers, 7.5-point favorites against the Texans at Houston on Thursday Night Football. 2 hours down, 2 more to go on You Better You Bet. Power hour, final hour still to come. Rapid fire recap, Loch Miss, and an early look at week 3 in hour number 3.
It's You Better You Bet from BetQL. For the latest line movement and edges to beat the spread, download the BetQL app today.
It's time for You Better You Bet with Nick Costos and Ken Barkley. They bring you the betting insight, laughs, and some rants along the way.
You know what Joe Judge likes? Kicking. Go for it. Never. Too risky. Why coach to win when you can coach not to lose?
We'll give you an edge to beat the spread and so much more.
Two teams that are facing each other in week 2. If in week 1 they both went under, what happens in the game when they play each other? Over is literally 60% the last 10 years. It's like the simplest thing imaginable.
What do we call that? Wagertainment. It's You Better You Bet from BetQL.
Our number You better, you bet, BetQL, magnificent, marvelous Monday. Nick Costos and Ken Barkley here, bringing to you the wagertainment for the next 2 hours. Proudly presented by the Bet Rivers Sportsbook, BetRivers.com, and the Bet Rivers app. Also want you to check out BetQL.com and the BetQL app for the tools you need to take down the books. Promo code Costos, K-O-S-T-O-S, at checkout for 20% off any subscription. Coming up this hour, more rapid fire recap, because
it's very rapid.
You know,
it keeps getting rapider.
Takes literally hours for us to get through.
Takes the entire show.
There's a lot of games. Day one of Lockmas since it's Monday. Ken's thoughts on the Heisman Trophy and a big game in the SEC coming up in a couple weeks that might end up deciding things as far as the Heisman Trophy is concerned. Power hour, final hour, all our bets for tonight for the Packers and the Lions. Side total. And I love it when you call me Big Proppa. Prop bets. Green Bay.
That was good. That delivery was good. I like that we're working that one in now that you're doing it. Yeah.
It's pretty good, right? We will get back to, or I guess we will not get back to because we haven't done it yet, but week three, our early look at the week three card coming up in moments here. Now, though, we will get back to, say, I was under the impression that we'd be done with the rapid fire recap at this point in the show, and we are not even close. So we're going to try and shoehorn it in this hour. So more NFL talk from the Sunday that was. Rick, fire the music bed here and let's get back into it. I think we'll scrap all the music here, or the sound rather, since we don't have time. So let's get back to the rapid fire recap, Ken, in a game that was just as annoying as it could possibly get, especially for us since we bet on the Atlanta Falcons. Bucks beat the Falcons 48-25. Bucks cover, game goes over the total. We had the Falcons plus 12.5. They're down 28-25 at the end of the third, yada, yada, yada. They lose by 23.
Yeah, this was the most frustrating bet by far that I made yesterday. I feel like I made a great bet and didn't win. Happens sometimes. Sometimes I make a bad bet and win. It happens. I mean, I pushed Bengals plus 3, which I feel like I had absolutely no business doing. We'll get to that in a second. And so sometimes it happens. Just the way variance works. 28-25 Tampa going to the fourth quarter. Tampa outscores Atlanta 20-0 from that point forward, featuring two interceptions of Matt Ryan, both returned for touchdowns. Just an absolute
by the same guy, play. Some guy named. Think about this. How many defensive players can you, the person listening, name or watching, name on Tampa Bay? Is Mike Edwards one of those guys? Mike Edwards sounds like a made-up person, like a Madden creative player.
Like the host of Jeopardy.
Two pick sixes in the fourth. Yes. Mike Edwards, preferable to Mike Richards. Two pick sixes for Mike Edwards in the fourth quarter of yesterday's game to sink our bet.
Yeah,
not JPP, not Shaq Barrett, not Ndamukong Suh, not Vita Vea. Mike Edwards sunk our bet.
Yep. Doomed by Mike Edwards. And I mean, there, aside from just the cover and the story of sweating the game and not winning, I mean, there are a couple here things here that are kind of interesting. I think most notably would be what is Atlanta going to be this year? And they were a team we talked about as potentially maybe being a good candidate to have the worst record. That was a bet that was 25-1 before the season that we advocated for. Have that in the pendings, along with obviously Indianapolis, the more high profile of the two wagers. And the total inability of Atlanta to run the ball. And to me, the thing that was most frustrating, like Arthur Smith and some of the decision-making, okay, great. Don't go for it on some fourth downs, go for it on others. Okay, whatever. I just can't believe, like, if you can't run the ball at all, and it's third and two, or it's fourth and two, like, not even inches. Like, it's like 2 yards to gain. And for the game, just, again, full disclosure, Atlanta 20 carries for 55 yards in the game. If that's you, I would argue pass plays have a better opportunity to succeed, even if the opportunity to succeed is only 50-60%.
You know who figured this out, by the way? The Dallas Cowboys, one of the dumbest teams in the last decade in the National Football League, figured this out last week in week one.
It's just amazing. And all these really, really high leverage, important downs, like the three different possessions, midfield, it's third and fourth and short. It's like I tweeted and I was like half joking, like, is it peer pressure that you're like, well, I'm supposed to run the ball here, so that's why we're going to run the ball here? Or there was a 0% chance any of these plays were going to be successful. I mean, that's the part that's almost the most demoralizing, is like, well, we got to, it's fourth and one, like, we got to get physical. Or Tampa's got like an advantage at every position imaginable on those running plays. So that was just, again, not something.
Tampa Bay has a video game final boss. Their defensive line in Vita Vea, and you're trying to run a wide receiver kick return or Cordarrelle Patterson straight at him. Good luck.
It's just tough. And like, even if it was like Mike Davis or Matt Ryan sneaking the ball. So that was something that stood out, is just like from a statistical standpoint, because of the pick sixes, Atlanta ends up pretty close in total yards, pretty close in yards per play. Obviously the turnovers like absolutely doomed them from a final score standpoint, but they gave a really good account of themselves in this game through three quarters. So it's tough to like, you want to be maybe like encouraged that they could keep that kind of game close. Like I bet on them, obviously, like I'm trying to take a glass half full standpoint. Obviously the coaching questionable, some of the decisions questionable. And this is going to be a thing that we're going to talk about with, like, I feel like every Atlanta game the rest of the season is Arthur Smith and this coaching staff and just kind of melding with the talent on the team. And like, what is this team going forward and how bad can this get, honestly?
Yeah. Arthur Smith's an idiot. Like sometimes he's aggressive, sometimes he's not. It's like Joe Judge. Like there's no rhyme or reason right to anything that happens with Arthur Smith. So I look, it's only two games into his coaching career. I think he's a disaster. We'll see what happens. I would not be optimistic if I were a Falcons fan right now. Tom Brady, you should be optimistic. Many different things about Tom Brady. Five touchdowns. Again, like he's going to win MVP. They're going to go like 16-1. Arians is going to win coach of the year. We're going to be right about all of this because they are just awesome. Mike Evans, 5 for 75, 2 touchdowns, 9 targets, a team high. Squeaky wheel got the grease yesterday for Tampa. Kyle Pitts had a good game, 5 for 73. I feel like he's just going to keep getting better and better. Ridley only 7 for 63 and a touchdown. I'd like to see Ridley get the ball more, Arthur Smith, or you can throw to Olamide, Zaccheaus, and Russell Gage. Cordarrelle Patterson, it might finally be happening. 7 carries, 11 yards, and a touchdown, but 5, 58-1 through the air. And Leonard Fournette, despite the fact that Bruce Arians said that Rojo was going to quote-unquote start, yeah, great. No one believes you, Bruce, with anything that you say. Fournette, 15 touches to only 7 for Rojo. Bucks about a pick'em or a slight home road underdog right now with the Rams, 53.5. And a game that I know we'll talk about later this hour, the Falcons, 3.5-point dogs at the Giants, total of 48. Let's go to the Bears and Bengals, Ken. We touched on this game a little earlier. Bears take down Cincinnati 20-17. Justin Fields comes in, plays the second half. Doesn't look great, but I think kind of injects the Bears with some energy and enthusiasm. Joe Burrow had a stretch where he threw interceptions on 3 consecutive passes, 1 return for a touchdown by Roquan Smith, and the Bengals still find a way to come back and push the opening line of 3, Ken, which you bet. So Chicago improves to 1-1. The Bengals drop to 1-1. Chicago 20, Cincy 17.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the turnovers already. Like, for both sides, they end up obviously determining the course of the game. The Burrow interceptions, which are just, like, absolutely staggering, you know, really kind of ended up dooming Cincinnati from a yards per play, a statistical standpoint. They obviously outgained the Bears by a lot. The Bears' offense in this game was, I mean, as bad as you could possibly imagine. I believe they had the lowest yards per play of any team that played yesterday, and I think maybe even this season. I think it was 3.4 yards per play for the combination of Andy Dalton, and then obviously he gets hurt and Fields comes in as well. So, you know, like Bears win 20-17, it might be like, okay, like there's something we can build on here. Like there's some really good stuff. Matt Nagy obviously coming out and saying if Andy Dalton is healthy, he's our starter. Seems like he avoided significant injury, but like even when he was in there, I think one of the main points is just like the total, like I think they had literally one explosive play all game, all 60 minutes on their entire offense. And it was like a 21-yard gain, I want to say by Mooney. So like, it was just, yes, again, the same problem that they had against the Rams. And we're like, well, that's the Rams. They limit the amount of explosive plays you can have. That's the whole design of the defense. Okay, well, you just played a home game against Cincinnati and you had one explosive play. So like, I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but just to really hammer that point, it wasn't the Rams. That's not why it was happening. It's actually because it's Matt Nagy and Andy Dalton in this collaboration.
I understand that, like, saying, and like the Bears PR releasing a statement after Nagy's press conference, Dalton's the starter if he's healthy. Like, not quite up there with Jordan's I'm back amongst best Chicago sports press releases of all time. I'll believe it when I see it. I really will. Like, Dalton's got a bone bruise right now. My guess is that Justin Fields is going to end up starting on Sunday when the Bears visit the Cleveland Browns. I'm excited to talk with Ken about that game as we move forward in this week. Again, my guess is that Justin Fields will start in that game. Fields 6 for 13, 60 yards and an interception, 10 carries for 31 yards. Kind of thrown into the fire. I feel like he'll look a lot different with a week of preparation, hopefully, here. Jamar Chase, 2 for 54, a long receiving touchdown, 42 yards. Love to see it for Jamar Chase. Tyler Boyd, 7 for 70. T. Higgins, 6 for 60. So the Bengals offense supporting all 3 of those receivers. Bit of a down game for Joe Mixon. I expect a bounce back for him coming up against the Steelers here. A-Rob, 2 for 24. I hope Fields can get him going. Mooney, 6 for 66. We'll let that sit there. Bengals +4.5 against the Steelers on Sunday. Bears +7.5 against the Browns. You better, you bet. BetQL, Nick Costos, Ken Barkley. Magnificent, marvelous Monday. Still rapid fire recapping week number 2 in the National Football League. Then,
rapid fire. Then,
yeah, rapid fire. All right. Moving at a glacial pace. A lot of information. We got to get to all of it here. Rams beat the Colts 27-24. Colts cover. Game goes over the total. Just a weird game, man. Just like stupidity, honestly, like on both sides. And I guess at the end, it's the Carson Wentz injury, I guess, that kind of shines to the forefront. Jacob Eason comes in, throws a pick immediately to Jalen Ramsey. So the Rams end up winning the game. And the report on Carson Wentz comes out moments ago on Monday here, Monday afternoon. Two sprained ankles, literally sprained both of his ankles. So we'll touch on that when we preview week number three. Ken, what do you have here on the Rams and the Colts?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like in terms of like takeaways from this game, I feel like the Rams, I don't know if I was particularly surprised by anything. Really, really good call by you, by the way, on Cooper Kupp potentially having an outstanding performance after Tyler Lockett did the same thing to the Colts in week one. Cooper Kupp finishes 9 catches on 11 targets for 163 and 2 touchdowns. Like, absolutely staggering. I gave that out on that Moose show on Sunday, too, so really appreciate the tip of the cap on that one. The only thing here is, like, the Colts quarterback play going forward. Like, how do we rate the team if it's Jacob Eason? If it's Carson Wentz, but we know he's playing with 2 hurt ankles, do we like dock the rating? Do we go with a different rating? How do we do this? And even if it's Wentz and he seems like he's remotely healthy, I really can't emphasize enough. This is someone in this game who threw a shovel pass interception, which is something that is almost impossible to do in professional football. And Carson Wentz, a guy who never met a turnover he couldn't throw, a sack he couldn't take, a third down he couldn't convert, managed to do it in this game. So like, even if he's healthy, those are the types of play, like, that's why we have Colts' worst record. Like, that's why we're all very down on Carson Wentz, even within the context of this game. I mean, you could argue that turnover ended up deciding the game, 3-point game. Colts were really bad in the red zone. That play literally could have decided the game. So even if he's healthy, what is this team going forward? What does that look like? What is their rating? If it's an unhealthy Wentz, if it's Jacob Eason, how much do we dock them? That'll obviously be really interesting as we go into this next game against the Titans.
One fantasy note on each team. And gets banged up in this game. Sony Michel comes in 10 for 46, looks good down the stretch. Interesting to see what the Rams like backfield committee is going to be like. We'll see about Henderson's health, but I think Sony Michel showed that he's going to at least be a part of this backfield now, and it's not going to be just like Daryl Henderson is the lead back, which really it was last week and this game until Henderson got hurt and Michel came in. And for the Colts, things you love to see, Michael Pittman getting involved in this offense, 8 for 123 on 11 targets. I kind of regret not playing Michael Pittman overs, but kind of needed to see it after what we saw in week number one from Pittman. Obviously, if it's no Wentz, that should hurt Michael Pittman, but we'll see. But Pittman, with Wentz at least, is now the number one receiver, the alpha dog in this Colts passing offense, at least until T.Y. Hilton, if T.Y. Hilton comes back from injury this season. Ken, let's go to the Browns and the Texans. Sure. I give you credit. You were on this before anybody else last week. You liked the over in this game. I had the over. I had Brandon Cooks over. I thought we were done when Tyrod Taylor went out. Davis Mills comes in, gets the game over the total, gets Brandon Cooks over receiving yards. The Texans do cover the spread. Cleveland wins for survivor pool, so thankful for that. Cleveland wins 31 for 21. Game goes over and the Texans cover.
Yeah, a little tough that Tyrod Taylor ends up getting injured in this game, because I really felt like we had valuable information to take forward the rest of the season off that week one game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, where it's like, I think Houston might be an over team this year. Like, the offense is actually really dynamic with Tyrod Taylor under center. Like, they're running a lot of exotic schemes. Like,
Tim Kelly's doing a great job.
Yeah, they're hitting explosive pass plays. Running the ball was not effective as much in this game. They ran 28 times for 82 yards. But just part of that is that Davis Mills ends up coming in for basically a game also where they were losing for almost the entire second half. So it's tough because with the Taylor injury, now we're like kind of in no man's land, right? Is this really an over team going forward? Is this a team where we want any part of the offense? Like, what is that? You would never have thought the downgrade from Taylor to Mills would be so impactful, except now Taylor's given us 2 data points that he might be awesome in this offense. And now we really are kind of like scratching our head about, at least in my case, like how to make an adjustment for this Thursday night game against the Panthers and going forward with a team that I thought was going to be kind of like a playovers, you know, a lot of points from both sides. Cleveland obviously had their way on the ground in this game too. Now kind of left not really sure what to do with the Texans going forward until Taylor gets healthy.
Yeah, 34-1-6 and 3 touchdowns for the Browns on the ground.
Oh, that's
led
all.
By Nick Chubb, 11 carries for 95 yards. My gut tells me it's going to be a month before we get the Texans back to being an over team. So reports have come out during our show today that the Tyrod Taylor's hamstring strain could cost him a month, 4 weeks of game action. That's not confirmed, but that's the report out there right now. Could be as long as a month for Tyrod. Nico Collins, like the rookie receiver, whom I really like, caught a 32-yard pass and then gets hurt in the game. He's going to miss like 2 to 3 weeks as well. So we're not going to see this Texans offense back at full strength for about a month now, probably here. I did really like Davis Mills coming out of college, but then again, I'm also like not like Mel Kiper Jr. So we'll see what happens with Houston coming up on Thursday, where they're 7.5-point home dogs against Sam Darnold and the Panthers. And as we told you, the Browns, 7.5-point favorites against likely Justin Fields and the Chicago Bears coming up on Sunday. Still to come, you better you bet. marvelous, magnificent Monday on BetQL. Only a couple more games for us to break down here in the rapid fire recap. The Patriots and the Jets. Zach Wilson just threw another pick. And the Broncos and the Jaguars. And once we're done with those two games, it's going to be Lockmas, day one of Lockmas. Santa Lockie's here to give out gifts as it concerns the Heisman Trophy market. Ken and I still have to take a look early at week number three in the National Football League. Ken's got a bet that he really likes. Maybe he'll give it out in this segment. We'll see. And then Power Hour, Final Hour, all our bets for tonight. So an action-packed hour and 40 minutes of You Better You Bet. We'll be back right after this.
It's You Better You Bet from BetQL. Download the BetQL app today to get the latest analytics to help you beat the sportsbooks. It's Nick Costos and Ken Barkley on You Better You Bet from BetQL.
Because the rapid fire recap takes so long, I feel like I now hate the music for it. Like I did like it, and I feel like I now despise it.
It's actually, they're just not going to be any more rapid fire recaps. We're just done. We're actually done for the rest of the season. There's just no.
Well, you know what we're going to do? I think we should keep calling it the rapid fire recap. But look, like, we have to get all the information in. Like it's all good stuff that we're giving you here.
I mean, it's what is Monday for? Monday's for unpacking the Sunday of the NFL. Like that's what it's for. That's what the show should be for on Mondays. If that ends up taking us 2/3 of the show, then great. You know, like has the content been bad? Are people displeased? You know, let's keep doing what we're doing.
As a wise man once said, so be it. I don't know who it was that said it. Seems like a pretty smart thing to say. We will get to day one of Lockmas coming up this segment. That is actually something that we will do because there's only two more games left to recap. So day one of Lockmas, Ken's thoughts on the Heisman Trophy market, an early look at week three coming up in the segment to follow. Then it's Power Hour, Final Hour, all our bets for tonight, the Packers and the Lions. Hey, Ken, guess what just happened?
I know what the punchline's going to be here, but it's still funny.
Zach Wilson just threw another pick. Oh! Used the joke earlier today.
Slammed.
Using it again. Yeah, there you have it. Patriots beat the Jets 25-6. Oh, man, I had the over. That's pretty bad. But I had the Patriots, which was a winner. So the Patriots win. The Patriots cover. Game goes under the total. Zach Wilson, 4 interceptions, Ken, and became the first player since 1991 to throw 3 interceptions within his first 5 pass attempts of a game.
And it's amazing how bad that is. And one of the things that's really remarkable about this game, when you start to like go through some of the box score stuff, possession by possession, is the fact that the Patriots offense really did not play well in this game, but because Zach Wilson was so enamored with turning the ball over as much as humanly possible, it didn't, I mean, a 19 point win in a game where the Patriots go 1-for-3 in the red zone and get outgained. I mean, some of that's just the picks lead to short fields. There's obviously a ripple effect that comes from a guy throwing that many interceptions.
The Jets ran it down their throat. The Jets had a great run. It was like, it's incredible that it ended up like this.
It's, I mean, 25-6 is like, it's not misleading because Zach Wilson was so terrible, but it is kind of an interesting game to think about just what is the true difference between the teams. Like, I'll be honest, like, I mean, I have a bet on Saints Patriots. We'll do that probably tomorrow on the show. I think it's possible the Patriots could get too much credit off of a performance like this, and that could potentially affect future point spreads. Here's my one thing from this game. This is the obstacle to the Colts having the worst record in the league this year. Like, this is the obstacle because this guy is the worst you could possibly imagine, and he's going to play every game. So, like, this is the obstacle that's in front of us. I'm rooting for the Jets every week the rest of the season now. Like, can I get 2 wins? Can I get 3 wins out of this to try to kind of create a situation? Now Tyrod Taylor's out for a month too, which is a disaster. Like, this is going to be troublesome. This is going to be a tough one for worst record when you have a quarterback performance like this, obviously.
Am I nuts? The answer is yes. Nuts for thinking? Right. Am I nuts? I think he's going to be all right this season. Like, I really do. I don't think Belichick, he's that big too. Of a disaster. It's Belichick. Yeah. Like, it's okay. Like, the offensive line's terrible. 19-33, 4 interceptions. It's the second game of his career. Like, you'd like for him to be playing better, as Joe Girardi would say. It's not what you want. But I feel like he's going to get it figured out. Now, what's problematic, Ken, is it doesn't get easier for Zach Wilson because they play the Broncos in Denver and that awesome secondary coming up on Sunday. Very interesting point spread in that game. Okay. Jets go 31-for-152 on the ground. Michael Carter looked good. Ty Johnson looked good. And they still only score 6 points in the game.
Has that ever happened? I wonder if a team's ever gone for 150 Mountain and scored like less than 7 points and lost by this margin. Has to be the first time ever. It's wild.
Two fantasy notes here, Jets wise, on this game. Elijah Moore, 4 for 47 on 8 targets. He's not going anywhere. And like Zach Wilson loves him. And I feel like at some point he's going to have a big spike in the box score, even when Jamison Crowder eventually returns. Braxton Berrios is like, is so annoying that like he's a thing in the National Football League. Just go away. 7 for 73 on 11 targets is the safety valve for Zach Wilson. Damian Harris also had like maybe like the best play of the season on that, like that touchdown run, which is pretty incredible. Broncos, 11-point favorites against the Jets on Sunday, 41.5 the total. Pretty incredible. And as Ken said, Patriots and the Saints, we'll talk about that game in the next segment when we preview week 3. But the rapid fire recap comes to an end right now with one of the teams we just discussed, and that's the Denver Broncos. Denver beat the Jaguars 23-13. Unfortunately, we bet the Jaguars in this game. Pretty annoying. Josh Lambeau, a.k.a. Josh Pinto, misses a couple kicks. Broncos cover. Game goes under the total. Broncos beat the Jaguars, Ken, by 10.
Yeah, I mean, I would never be the person to tell you, like, the Jags were dead right in this game or that they were, like, super live to win. It's just they could have covered the 6 pretty easily. They got completely outclassed statistically. Trevor Lawrence was, I mean, how's the stat line for you? 14 for 33 for 118 and a touchdown and 2 picks. The team didn't have a red zone possession in the game, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Their touchdown obviously came on special teams for those who were watching. I think it was, like, a 108-yard kickoff return, 107-yard kickoff return.
And they did have a pass on their first drive to Marvin Jones. But after that drive, the opening drive, Ken, 83 yards of offense for the Jaguars.
Yep, absolutely. That's a good point. So, yeah, I mean, just Lawrence terrible. No reds. I mean, they got like 5.9 to 3.8 in yards per play. So plus 2.1 for Denver. It'll be interesting to see Denver going forward. Their first two games are against the Giants and the Jags, and they play the Jets next week. So, like, we're still not going to learn. The team's going to be 3-0, and we're going to know nothing about them, which is absolutely remarkable. Is this a team, you know, it's kind of like what's happening with the Raiders. Like, do we trust anything that's happening right now? Do we think this is a playoff contending team? Maybe the record.
I think they're better than the Raiders. Denver's defense is significantly better than the Raiders.
Okay. I'm unanswered questions, right? We're going to learn. We ain't learning this Sunday, but we're going to learn the week after. So yeah, for Jacksonville, like, I think a missed opportunity just from a betting standpoint, like miss 2 field goals, lose by 10 is pretty rough. And you get the special teams touchdown. But for Denver, I mean, you know, I can knock them and I can be like, whatever, like, this is what you're supposed to do to teams that you're way better than. You're supposed to outgain them significantly, force turnovers, defense play great. That's what they've done for 2 straight weeks.
The AFC West is fun, man. Like, all those matchups are going to be a lot of fun this year with the way that they were all playing to start the season.
First one this
here.
Sunday.
Yeah. Ken, do you know which quarterback in the NFL has attempted the most passes this year through 2 weeks over 20 yards?
Attempted the most over 20 yards. So I know, I mean, the answer is going to be Bridgewater. I know Bridgewater was second behind somebody in like explosive plays or something, some kind of downfield passing stuff.
The answer is Teddy Bridgewater, which is wild through 2 weeks here. Kind of runs counter to everything we usually think about Teddy. 26 of 34, 328 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Cortland Sutton, and like I faded Sutton yesterday, and I really don't regret it with how bad he looked at week 1 against the Giants coming off the ACL. Something clicked. 9 for 159. He looked all the way back. Marvin Jones, the only Jaguars receiver worth a damn. 6 for 55 and a touchdown. Laviska Shenault injured his shoulder. Underwent an MRI today. No word yet on the severity of that injury. And for the Broncos running game, Javonte Williams is clearly better than Melvin Gordon. It's just like a matter of time before the backfield is his completely. Javonte, 13 for 64. Melvin, 13 for 31. Melvin's overall stat line for the season, buoyed by that 70-yard touchdown run against a Giants defense that had quit back in week 1. And one just note on the Jaguars, you mentioned Lawrence's stat line, obviously dreadful, 118 passing yards. He's like Ryan Fitzpatrick Jr. with these YOLO balls. He is chucking the ball down the field. Like, at some point, some of these are going to hit, and he's going to have like a 450-yard stat line. Maybe not against a defense like Denver's, but just something to keep in mind moving forward with the Jaguars. Perhaps that happens this weekend against the Arizona Cardinals, where the Jaguars are 7.5-point home underdogs. And as we referenced, the Broncos double-digit favorites, 11 points against Zach Wilson and the New York Jets. And thus concludes 2.5 hours into the show.
Mercifully.
The rapid fire recap.